You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Let's Talk Macro, the podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events. It's time to look back at the month of June and see what went on in the macroeconomic landscape. I'm Ahalya, your co-host, and I've got with us Srijit Balasubramanian, senior economist in the fixed income fund management team, to take us through it all. Hi, Srijit. How are you?
Ahalya, how are you doing?
Doing well, lots to catch up on, so let's dive right in. I just want to set the context for today's conversation. So after months of the West Asia conflict, the Strait of Hormuz being blocked, oil prices being high and volatile, and economies reeling under the pressures of higher inflation and lower growth, we finally may have relief in the form of an agreement between Iran and the US. Hopefully, fingers crossed, shipments through the Strait of Hormuz normalize, even if gradually. India has also seen measures by the RBI and the government to attract foreign capital, which has completely flipped the script on balance of payments for the current financial year. So today, as economic forecasts get upgraded, we're going to look at the details of the events and the policy measures, the latest global economic context, and what all of this means for India's near and medium-term economic outlook. A lot for us to unpack. So, Srijit, let's start with the West Asia conflict. With the agreement signed, it seems, or it would seem, that hostilities have broadly ended despite some of the latest strikes that have happened, and shipping through the Strait of Hormuz may steadily improve. So, how do you read the situation and its macro impact for now?
The ending of the US-Iran conflict is definitely, you know, very important, given the economic linkages, for the world and India. Apart from 1/5 of global oil and gas supply that passes through the Strait of Hormuz, it is also critical for the supply of natural gas, helium, sulfur, fertilizers, and many more goods, which are critical industrial inputs. And particularly for India, a large share of these imports flow through the Strait, in addition to linkages with the Gulf on trade and remittances. So the worries were on both inflation and availability of goods. And we know oil prices impact not just retail fuel price, but they increase the price of food, various goods, as industrial input prices go up, and potentially wages with a lag. With the conflict ending, oil prices in both the spot and futures market have fallen to the 70s in terms of dollar per barrel. The spot price is now back to the pre-war level. This is remarkable. I mean, also given the recent commentary that inventory rebuilding once the Strait opens could keep oil prices higher than pre-war. Given that sort of a commentary that we had, this fall in oil prices is quite remarkable. So for now, the market believes higher supply will be the major factor, with Iranian oil also becoming available and probably at a discount to begin with. Shipping insurance cost should hopefully moderate from here. But meanwhile, even prices of aluminium and urea have also significantly eased. This is all good news, as it eases the pressure on our inflation, fiscal situation and growth.
Definitely a welcome and positive update for the world and for India. Let's hope the situation only improves from here and that the Strait of Hormuz becomes fully operational. Now, on the recent policy measures announced to attract foreign capital, what is the impact on India's external account and the broader economy?
On June 5th, on the policy day, the RBI announced measures which included expanding the universe of the fully accessible route, the FAR, government securities, concessional FX swaps for external commercial borrowings, that is ECBs, by public sector companies, and restoration of the realization time of export proceeds to 9 months. And among all this, the most important measure was on the FX swap, which bears the full hedging cost of 3 to 5 year FCNRB deposits, the NRI deposits, raised till 30th of September this year. Meanwhile, the government announced tax exemption on both capital gains and interest on investment in government securities by FPIs and the Bank of International Settlements, BISS. So this should also support India's possible inclusion in the Bloomberg Global Aggregate Bond Index, the government measures. And therefore, markets expect something like $50 to $70 billion of foreign capital inflows from these measures, with some quarters expecting even higher. Now, we've discussed about India's external accounts facing funding challenges, right? I mean, which worsened with the conflict. The measures announced now will take our FY27 balance of payments from a previously estimated deficit of around $70 billion to now a surplus of $15 to $20 billion. I mean, that is including the impact of expected lower crude oil import prices. Now, that's a big reversal of our immediate concerns on external funding. And it is also important to assess how this impacts the RBI's reserves, and that is the FX reserves and banking system liquidity.
Right.
So these inflows will add to both RBI's spot FX reserves and short dollar forward positions, which is already sort of close to $100 billion as per the latest data. So it will not change the sum of the two, or the net reserves or the net FX reserves of the RBI. But for core liquidity, which was around, I think, 4.6 trillion rupees in mid-June, that will now increase to more than 10 trillion at least, when these flows come in. So RBI will likely sterilize, or that is, take out some of this excess liquidity through reverse repos and USD-INR sell buy swaps. If needed, it could also use the market stabilization scheme, MSS bonds, to absorb some of the liquidity. But again, the bar is quite high if you ask me for a CRR hike and so on. Mm-hmm. In fact, if it uses the sell buy swap, it will also help the RBI reduce its short dollar forward liabilities. It will help manage the settlements from 2029 to 2031 of the FX swaps the RBI will undertake in the next few months against the capital flow. So when these come due, 3 to 5 years later, it will help them manage those settlements. And in fact, when we looked at the late 2013 FCNR scheme, the RBI had turned net long in mid-2014 itself, around 6 months later, on dollar forwards up to 1 year. And thereafter, it considerably reduced its three-year liabilities within the two-year period itself. By late 2015, it had considerably reduced all the three-year liabilities. So just a matter of 2 years. Mm-hmm. So the balance of payments for this financial year, therefore, is now much better, like I said, due to the measures taken. But RBI will have to manage its forward dollar book and the banking system liquidity.
Right. So improvements in the West Asia conflict, as well as India's external account for this year, definitely some relief there for anyone who's been closely monitoring the situation. Amidst all of this, though, Shijit, how has the global economic backdrop been? Has it changed a lot since we last spoke? And how does that impact the Indian economy now?
So that's an important question, because the two main global factors we've often talked about have been higher global rates. Mm-hmm. We've discussed about how bond yields across US, Euro area, Japan have been much higher. And the second point has been global investment themes like AI, which have driven capital flows not to India, but to countries like US, Korea, Taiwan, and so on. So on the first point, that is rates, US growth, if you see, continues to surprise to the upside. And the markets, in fact, assess the first Fed meeting by the new chair to be hawkish, as he stressed on the Fed's commitment to price stability. And in fact, 50% of the committee now expects a rate hike this year versus none in March. So 2-year US Treasury yields, which reflects markets' policy expectations, that has moved up. And the dollar index has also strengthened. So global rates continue to remain sort of high. On AI, while the narrative is still strong, we've seen some mixed market reactions lately, right? As the capital expenditure by some of these big tech companies continue, supply of bonds and equity has really moved up. And we know the broad adoption of AI is still ahead of us. And so, for instance, we've seen equity market corrections recently in Korea and US. So we'll be watching the AI space and the global rate drivers closely for signs of any sustained relief to India's market yields.
Right. So global rates are still high as market expects Fed hikes this year. And the AI story is still going strong, even, if it's with some mixed market reactions recently. So Shrijit, given all that we have discussed so far, what are your thoughts and expectations on India's economic and policy outlook? It's something we've been talking about the past couple of months in quite a bit of detail.
Yeah. So all these changes, matter a lot, like I said. So near term mm-hmm. concerns have abated. The balance of payments should now turn into surplus this year after 2 years of deficit. Growth should be now a bit higher, and inflation may be a bit lower than what we had expected. But we are looking at a strong El Nino this year, which reduces our rainfall, the monsoon season rainfall, and increases average temperatures in general. So we have to watch out for any impact on rural consumption from this, which has been the silver lining for us in the last 1 year. And also the impact on higher inflation in the second half of this financial year from higher food prices. All said, we still expect the RBI to hike interest rates by 50 basis points, but not before October. So the market seems to be, in fact, debating whether hikes are needed at all, given moderate nominal growth and so on. So that's where we are on monetary policy. On fiscal, now lower oil and urea prices imply lower subsidies and a chance to maybe even reverse some of the excess duty hikes that we had on fuel later this year. After expenditure management and utilization of the $1 trillion economic stabilization fund. Now, if needed, even if there is 20 to 30 basis points of fiscal slippage, we do not expect higher G-Sec borrowing this year. And as this can be managed, if required, again, through higher T-bill borrowing, for instance. However, apart from meeting fiscal deficit targets and, you know, following the planned debt to GDP trajectory for the next 5 years, I think we've spoken about this again before. Mm-hmm. It is important that fiscal policy now works out a strategy for the medium term, right? In terms of medium term external capital flows and growth.
You know, that's an interesting point, Srijit. If I could dig a little deeper there, what aspects do you think policy should really focus on in the medium term then?
Well, like I said, see, recent measures announced by the RBI and the government should stabilize the immediate situation. But we need to identify and press ahead with drivers for medium to longer term growth. So, for example, measures to attract medium term capital inflows like FDIs, you know, that will be very important. But we need to identify and develop our growth drivers in an economic situation where household consumption growth is quite leveraged. In fact, moderating a bit, and a very large private capital expenditure cycle has been missing. So free trade agreements, FTAs, you know, are also good. And the government is doing some great work here. And this has to happen alongside identifying sectors, value addition points, specific export products and markets to leverage these FTAs, right? And India also has the advantage of a demographic dividend. But the labor will need the skilling at scale and, you know, likely some reskilling with the impact of AI as well. And, you know, things like diversification of supply chains and export markets, that will continue to be critical. And given the experience from the pandemic, the West Asia conflict that we just had, and even, you know, restrictive trade policies that we've seen like tariffs. Again, efforts to improve ease of doing business will have to be ongoing. So all of these policies have to create a virtuous cycle of employment and wage growth, which will likely get the private capital expenditure moving. And although China's excess capacity in various sectors amidst, you know, weak domestic demand there could remain a challenge. But we need these policies for the medium term. Therefore, policy measures should focus on medium-term external, you know, inflows and growth. And in fact, there's been some recent news on policymakers being keen to continue exploring additional measures. And that is hopefully in this direction.
Right. So the immediate situation seems to be under control, but more measures and policy could focus on for medium term growth. With that, it's time for me to summarize the key takeaways. So let's dive into it. The first point of note, with resolution of the West Asia conflict in sight, the price of crude oil has reversed to pre-war levels and prices of other commodities should moderate further as supply improves, easing the pressure on fiscal growth and inflation. Additionally, recent measures by the RBI and the government have significantly eased near-term external funding pressure, and this has turned India's balance of payments this fiscal year from a large deficit to surplus, and growth is expected to get better. Second, for any sustained relief to India's market yields, though, global rates, which are still high, need to ease, and global capital flows, majorly driven by the AI story, on which there has been more mixed market reactions lately, has to moderate. For now, markets' rate expectation from the Fed has actually picked up, the US dollar has strengthened, and the AI narrative is still buoyant. And finally, while near-term concerns have abated, there could be a strong El Nino this year, which can impact rainfall, temperature, and therefore the rural economy. We expect the RBI to hike interest rates by 50 basis points, but not before October. Pressure on fiscal policy from oil and fertilizer prices have also reduced, and we do not expect any additional G-Sec borrowing this year, even in case of any mild fiscal slippage. However, it is important to bolster medium-term growth and external capital inflows like FDIs via various strategic, coordinated, and coherent policy measures. That's pretty much it for today. I think we, you know, had a very productive conversation, Srijit. So thank you, as always, for taking us through all of these updates.
Thank you, Helia. My pleasure.
Always a good way to wrap up the month, and we'll catch you next month with another episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. Until then, bye-bye.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.